Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you aboard this week as we tumble forward through the events of this past week and even looking forward to some events that will be taking place in the week to come. And I just want to welcome back my extremely attractive audio engineer who's back with me. She just arrived from Okinawa tomorrow morning. No, how does it go when you're over there? Anyway, she arrived tomorrow morning, but she's here now. No, I'm just kidding. Because, you know, when I called you, it was always, I would call you last night and it would be tomorrow morning. And it's all very confusing. But anyway, so her body clock is still a little, let's see, right now she thinks it's about 4 in the morning. So if I lose you, this will be a test as to how entertaining and educational the program is. If Takako falls asleep, then, you know, maybe the show needs a bit to be reworked or something. But if she manages to stay awake, I suppose we'll assume that we're doing a good job. Now, I want to start off with, well, a bit of an apology. Not an apology, but an update. Let's just call it an update. You'll remember a week or two ago, I took the National Organization for Women to task because they had not yet stood up and demanded that David Letterman resign, you know, for being a misogynistic scumbag there at The Late Show, a CBS product. Well, I have a hot off the presses. This is from CNN this past week from their showbiz section, showbiz with a Z. Yeah, that's CNN. They say the National Organization for Women said that David Letterman's actions, now they said this in a letter that they wrote, which you can read online if you want to. They said that David Letterman's actions had created a, quote, toxic environment, unquote. Now the letter, dated October 9th from Terry O'Neill, now president. It's weird that the now president has one of those names, Terry. Could be a guy, could be a girl. Maybe it used to be a girl, became a guy. Maybe it used to be a guy, became a girl. It's hard to say, but he, she, it is now the president of the National Organization for Women. Well, Terry asked to meet with executives there, CBS, asked to meet to discuss respect for women in the workplace and, quote, your company's obligation to strive for gender parity in decision-making at all levels within your organization, unquote. So Terry wants to meet with executives over there at The Late Show. Now, referring to Letterman's revelations on his program back on October 1st, you remember that. Revelations that he'd had, let's say, inappropriate, could we say Clinton-esque, relationships with several women on his staff. Terry O'Neill, he, she, it over at NOW says that such behavior, quote, infects the work culture with uncertainty, gossip, and in some cases hostility. The resulting toxic environment is unfair to everyone. And now I read the entire article here from CNN's showbiz section, and nowhere does Terry, he, she, it from the National Organization for Women, nowhere does Terry demand that Letterman resign, that he lose his job, that next year's salary be donated to the National Organization for Women's Abortion Outreach Program or whatever. So I'm not going to apologize to the National Organization for Women because they should have, if they really were for women, you know, instead of just out to get women, they should be the National Organization Out to Get Women. But they call themselves the National Organization for Women. If they were actually for women, they would have asked and they demanded that David Letterman resign, that he be replaced with a woman, preferably a lesbian, according to... Anyway, National Organization for Women, again, proving they're not for women. All right, now let's move on to much more serious news. I had to get that update out of the way right off the bat. From the Culture File, from the Express newspaper over in the United Kingdom, long-term mobile phone users could face a higher risk of developing cancer in later life. Yes, that's according to a report. Let's see, it was a survey of 12,800 people in 13 countries. It's been overseen by the World Health Organization. So is it possible that mobile cell phone use, whatever you want, I guess we don't call them cell phones anymore. That's very 1990s. But mobile phone use could lead to an increase in brain tumors? I guess it's possible. I mean, you've got a high-powered receiver transmitter sitting right there next to your ear. You know, I remember when I was in the service, we had receivers and transmitters that if you got too close to them, you could feel your whole body vibrate. You know, they were big and all. But anyway, who knows? I just wanted to make you aware. This is a public service announcement that there is an apparently credible report that holding the mobile phone next to your head could lead to an increased possibility of brain tumor. Anyway, that's why I went with the headset a long time ago. Yeah, I went with I used to have the wire that dangled down from the ear into the phone in the pocket. I used to be one of those annoying jerks, you know, talking, and you couldn't tell I was talking to anybody. Now I'm one of those really annoying Bluetooth jerks with the cockroach in my ear, as my daughter calls it. Now I'm one of those jerks, but I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up because it's something that I've thought about ever since I stood too close to an antenna back in Okinawa and felt like I was being transported up to the Starship Enterprise. I've always wondered about cell phones. I don't know. If anyone can find any credible or incredible evidence to the opposite. Anyway, a study of 12,800 people is not that big of a study, but could be significant. So there. I don't know. I put it out there. What else? All right, let's continue in the Culture File with something that's a little easier to nail down. This is from Time Magazine last week on Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan, which we think is a man, but we don't know. I've never seen Arnie Duncan. Arnie, now that name, that's probably a man's name, right? But the person is in the Obama administration, so one can never be sure if it could be a transgendered she-male. And we just, especially Secretary of Education, that's a prime location in the Obama administration for deviance. We know that things associated with education, Obama likes to put, you know, transgendered cross-dressing freaks into those type of jobs. So we don't know about all of Arnie Duncan's past, but let's just assume that he is hostile to everything good. And generally a danger to your children if they're in the public schools. Anyway, Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan went to Columbia University last year, the Columbia Teachers College, which, by the way, Time tells us is the oldest teacher training school in the nation. And Arnie delivered a speech blasting the education schools that have trained the majority of the 3.2 million teachers working in the U.S. public schools today. Did you get that? The U.S. Secretary of Education blasted educators that train teachers, okay? He said, quote, by almost any standard, many, if not a majority, of the 3.2 million teachers working in the U.S. public schools today in the nation's 1,450 schools, colleges, and departments of education are doing a mediocre job of preparing teachers for the realities of the 21st century classroom. Now, this was Columbia University, and so the audience, according to Time, knew that Duncan wasn't talking directly to them. So he was very bold. He went to a university where he would be well-received, and he made this pronouncement that educators are not getting the job done training teachers. Duncan's speech, according to Time, raises a big question. If most teacher colleges are mediocre, does that mean the teachers they produce are equally lackluster? Well, one of the major problems with answering this question, says David Steiner, who's New York's education commissioner, is he says it's that we simply don't know and we can't know. We don't know and we can't know. That should be the mantra of not only teachers, but universities where teachers are educated. They should carve it in stone above the entrance to the university there. In fact, right there at Columbia. We don't know. We can't know. That sounds about right if you're producing cogs in the public education wheel. We can't know. And furthermore, we don't know. And although we don't know, it's only because furthermore, we can't know. All right, so there's the state of public education in America today. Even a deviant in the Obama administration recognizes that teachers are at best mediocre. And I think lackluster would be an understatement. But then again, I never did go to university. So maybe it's my education that's lacking. Maybe I'm not smart enough to recognize the fact that we don't know and we can't know. All right. Now let's move on through the culture file. This is a story about the census that is a little bit disturbing. Now the census in the past has never been a very controversial issue, at least from my recollection, but it has become so since America's first Kenyan president seems to be organizing the census around a number of politically explosive issues. And let's just jump right in. This is from the Associated Press. Dateline San Francisco. The U.S. Census Bureau is making an unprecedented effort to include same-sex couples in next year's national population count. But legally married gay couples won't show up as such in the official once-a-decade tally, according to bureaucrats there. Now, same-sex married couples, according to the AP, will be added into the category for unmarried partners. Very popular word these days. Partners. Yeah, nobody says your husband, your wife, your spouse anymore. They always say partner, just so they don't offend the queers. Can you imagine that? The entire business and social culture of the United States has been transformed over the past decade to where you can't use the term wife, husband, or spouse, even in cases where that's obviously who you would be referring to, because we don't want to offend the deviants who are pouring out of the closet left and right. And so we just use the word partner. Your partner. A partner is someone you have in tennis, for crying out loud. But that's beside the point, I suppose. Let's get on to the article. Same-sex married couples will be added to the category of unmarried partners for the census. And the agency plans to make the data on same-sex couples who describe themselves as married available on a state-by-state basis. Yes. Interesting, isn't it? Gary Gates, a University of California, Los Angeles demographer, he's been advising the Census Bureau on gay issues. And I think, folks, that goes beyond, you know, what the color of the carpet compared to the drapes is. That's your typical gay issue. But I think it goes much deeper than that. Gates stressed that it's important for gay couples to participate in the census, noting that information drawn from the last census had been used in lawsuits dealing with same-sex marriage and to lobby congressional representatives who may wrongly assume that they do not have many gay constituents. Which I can assure you is not a problem here in Colorado. All of the representatives here in Colorado know that they have a lot of homosexual constituents because you can't drive 50 feet around here without seeing a rainbow bumper sticker on somebody's Subaru. So we don't have a problem with that here in Colorado. We know the place is packed, overflowing with queers. It's disgusting. What about United Airlines? You were just recently on United Airlines.
Yesterday.
Did you have any flight attendant guys? Two of them, huh?
They were the only.
Uh-oh, only two flight attendant guys, and they were both flight attendant guys.
Like.
Yeah, well, you know how to pick them. You can spot them. You have a pretty sensitive gaydar.
Very.
Very clean cut they were, huh?
Very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice. let's see. Now, you're distracting me from the census. Let's see. There are concerns at the Census Bureau. Undercounting same-sex couples remains a significant concern, according to Gates. What's this person's name? What was it here? Gary Gates. That's probably a guy. Since some couples may not be living openly and fear discrimination. So he thinks undercounting them in the census, maybe it's because they're hiding in their fear. They're in fear of discrimination. Since when is a homosexual in America today afraid of discrimination? For crying out loud, it's a heterosexual Christian who has to hide in the closet, for crying out loud. What do we have here? Tim Olson, assistant chief of the Census Bureau's field division, told gay community leaders. What's a gay community leader? Is that someone who owns a gay bar? Is that a gay community? Anyway, he told gay community leaders at a census outreach meeting in San Francisco that the agency is continuing to refine the way it counts same-sex couples and could have the ability to separate married from unmarried couples in time for future surveys. How do you count gay couples? I mean, do you go by the number of piles in any given city? It's the Weekly Worldview. Did he say cruising? Was that Aerosmith? Didn't that guy, didn't he like get back on the horse and he ended up falling off stage somewhere?
He's not a gay.
No, he's not gay. At least as far as we can tell. At least as far as any of his public statements are concerned.
He's a hidden.
Yeah. Right? He's a what now?
He's not openly gay.
Yeah, if he is gay, he's in the closet. He does wear a lot of spandex and scarves, but that could just be left over from the 80s, and those guys weren't gay. They knew what the chicks liked. All right, now let's get back to serious news here. Not geriatric rock stars falling off the wagon and then off the stage. The hate crimes legislation. Now, this is important news for anyone who is a professing Christian and even a believing Christian. I wonder if there's a difference. A professing Christian is someone who sits on the Catholic Archdiocese. A believing Christian is someone who stands out in front of the Catholic Church trying to collect signatures for the Personhood Initiative. Well, we'll get to that later. We're going to get to that later. We've got some personhood news. But the Senate has passed a bill extending hate crimes laws. Remember, there used to be hate crimes back in the 60s during the Civil Rights Movement. The definition of hate crimes covered assaults based on race, religion, color, and national identity. And now they've expanded that to include homosexuals of all various stripes and types. Transgendered, lesbian, gay, other gendered, uncertainly gendered. The Senate approved legislation last Thursday to expand hate crimes to include attacks based on a person's gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, and disability. That's great. They slip in the disability as if people are going around beating up guys in wheelchairs all the time. Come on now. They sent the bill to President Barry Ho, who is expected to sign it into law. The Senate, they attached the hate crimes bill to the defense spending bill. That's right. So in an effort to support the troops, they've extended hate crimes to ferries. So, I don't know. An interesting tactic used in this democratic process. Representative process, I suppose you'd call it. The legislative process. Don't they say that watching legislation being made is like watching sausage being made? Something that you don't want to see up close? Well, this seems to be a perfect example of this. So, they attached the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009... to the $680 billion defense spending bill, thereby getting everyone virtually to vote for it. It won 68 to 29. And so this is the beginning. If the people in the government decide to enforce this legislation as it's written, this is the beginning of the end of being able to be a witness for Jesus Christ in public. Yeah. This is the beginning of the end. And by the way, I was thinking about something the other day, and I want you to comment on this. because I'm not sure. I've done a little bit of research, but let's put the hate crimes bill aside. Does anyone know why Bibles are primarily black? Any idea? Why are Bibles primarily black? You know, God is associated with light and goodness and all that, and black is typically associated with darkness and deviance and badness. But why are most Bibles black? I think I know the answer.
Easy to
spot it. Easy to hide. Makes them easy to hide. Because in many cultures, throughout many chapters of human history, Bibles have been contraband for which one could lose one's life. I'll have to ask, I have some friends who smuggle Bibles into China on a regular basis. And I won't name them in public because I don't want to get them busted, because I'm sure the Chinese are listening. Although maybe they don't speak English, so they don't understand. But anyway, I just wondered about that the other night, and if someone knows a better reason, let me know, because I don't want to be a moron, but I'm positing that. I've done a little research into it, and it seems to me that Bibles are black so that they can be hidden more easily, readily. All right, now I've moved off of the Matthew Shepard defense spending bill. You remember Matthew Shepard, right? He was the homosexual college student who was either buying or selling some methamphetamine up in Montana, or was it Wyoming? No. And he ended up getting beat to death by a couple other crank fiends. Oh. That's all alleged, except the fact that he died. He actually did die. In fact, it's not even alleged that he was murdered. He actually was murdered. I remember because I went up with a group up to Cheyenne, or was it Laramie? I went up to Laramie with a group, and we demanded that the two killers be handed over for execution, the two guys who murdered Matthew Shepard. We demanded, after they were convicted, we went up to the sentencing, we demanded they be handed over for execution by the people. And, they didn't hand them over. In fact, it's now morphed into the Matthew Shepard Memorial Defense Spending Bill, better known as the hate crimes law, that's pushing Christians further and further into the closet. But let's move on into other things political from the politics file. Barry Ho, over there at the White House, has highlighted a new multi-million dollar technology fund for Muslim nations following a pledge he made in his landmark speech to the Islamic world. The White House said the U.S. Overseas Private Investment Corporation, that's OPIC. Okay, now I want you to just make a mental note of OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. They've issued a call for proposals for the fund. So the money's set aside, the money's sitting there, and the government wants people to come, groups, organizations, even companies, to come and provide ideas for how to spend the between $25 and $150 million for selected projects and funds. So OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, wasn't Clinton involved with an investment corporation like the Arkansas Development Corporation that he used for a number of nefarious activities? Anyway, this just reminded me of that. It could be that I'm just making an association based on ignorance. But here we've got a slush fund of money set up for Barry Ho to fund goodness and kindness and technology in the Muslim world. And I just wanted to make a mental note of OPIC so we can keep track of what goes on here. Because my sensibilities tell me that this is basically going to be used for funding of his sycophants in the Islamic world, of which I'm sure there are many. Now, proposals on how to blow this money, your money and mine, must be submitted by the end of November, and managers of the fund that make a final short list will make personal presentations in Washington in January. So you'll have an opportunity if you want to give an idea or be a part of blowing this money that we don't have. You can go up there and kiss Barry Ho's ring, and he can accept, quite possibly accept your idea for how to blow some more of your grandchildren's money to help the Muslim world and advance in technology. Final selections will be announced next June. What do you bet that those don't make the front page of how OPEC is going to blow this money? How much you want to bet that doesn't make page one of the New York Times? Let's see. Is there anything else on here? Oh, yeah. This is from the French press agency, by the way. In what may be one of the defining moments of Barry Ho's presidency, Barry laid out a new blueprint for U.S. Middle East policy, pledged to end mistrust, forge a state for Palestinians, and defuse a nuclear showdown with Iran. Okay, now where is it in there that he was going to blow $150 million into a slush fund for alleged Muslim technology? I don't remember hearing that in the speech, but I suppose this is how it came out in the wash. This is the way it works. Great. Let's keep an eye on OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. We'll keep an eye on that. All right, now, let's move on into the war file. It's been 2 months since General McChrystal requested more troops for Afghanistan, and people are wondering if Barry Ho is stalling. U.S. officials admit that it could be November before a decision is finally taken on whether to agree to General Stanley McChrystal's request for more troops. The biggest tussle, according to the Times Online from the United Kingdom, the biggest tussle is between McChrystal and Vice President Jumpin' Joe Biden. Jumpin' Joe plugs Biden, who argues against escalation in the war. He wants more emphasis on Pakistan. Says that the real threat is not the Taliban, but Al-Qaeda. Biden is seen as the in-house pessimist, and he has adopted a subtle campaign to make his case. Well, you know, it's Afghanistan's a tough call. That is going to be one hard slog. I remember saying that when we sent the first troops in there back in December of 2001, that this was going to be a long slog. Afghanistan is a tough one. And I think the key to success in Afghanistan is to kill and destroy all of the Al-Qaeda and all of the Taliban. Kill and destroy all or as many as humanly possible. Subjugate the peoples under a dictator of our choosing and get out of there. Preferably a Christian dictator. Preferably. But like I say, Afghanistan, that is a tough one. Figuring out how to win there is going to be very difficult. And I'm not so sure that the fact that Joe Biden has a serious impact on the debate makes me any more comfortable with that situation over there. But he is a foreign policy expert, from what I understand. From what I've been told. We can count on Jumpin' Joe to be there in the debate. All right, now let's move on from politics, the world of the surreal and the bizarre and the stupid. Let's move into the personhood file. I've got an update from last week. Now, you'll remember last week, I was quite excited about the personhood file because it was very thick. And as I may or may not have noted, and I just don't remember because the personhood news is coming fast and furious, Nevada and Michigan have joined us in the great social campaign to reestablish the personhood of everyone from the beginning of their beginning, for crying out loud. It's so obvious to everyone. I was having a conversation with a young man who was surprised that the Catholic bishops and the archdiocese, especially here in Colorado, but around the country, are not on board with this. He was a Catholic. In fact, he was signing my petition. And he was saying, you know, I'm really surprised that the archbishop hasn't come out for this, you know. And he said, doesn't it seem to be common sense? And I said, well, you know, when you get weighed down with a lot of political considerations and a lot of worldly aspirations, it's easy to lose sight of simple common sense issues like the personhood of everyone with human DNA. If you got human DNA in my book, you're a person. And I didn't have to go to school or college to learn that. It was something that I intuitively knew even before I started grade school, as a matter of fact. Anyway, I touted the talked last week about a law in Oklahoma. And you'll remember I was excited about their definition of an unborn child because they defined a child as everything, including the human conceptus, zygote, morula, blastocyst, embryo, and fetus. And that seemed really exciting. But, well, let me just give it to you from the Associated Press. Two new laws are being challenged in the Oklahoma courts. They would give the state some of the strictest abortion laws in the country by forcing women to answer questions about their about race, about their relationships, and listen to a doctor talk them through an ultrasound, and then state these two controversial laws in Oklahoma. Then, after they've answered the questions, after they've listened to a doctor talk them through an ultrasound, then they can kill the baby. I am Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. And my extremely attractive audio engineer had to jump on that tune. That is one of the most powerful bumpers that we've got for things that are true. And so let's continue. And by the way, it is not true that in Oklahoma, now after the after defining a child as everything from the conceptus, the zygote, the morula, the blastocyst, embryo, and fetus, they still say you can kill the baby. I'm very disappointed in our friends in Oklahoma. The law that's been written is called the Statistical Reporting of Abortions Act, and it's just another regulation on the killing of innocent people. Apparently, the people in Oklahoma have not gotten the memo that we've moved on from regulating killing innocent people to actually working to end it via personhood. But listen to this. This is interesting. Observers of the Oklahoma law say the trajectory of the legal cases that this law will bring could mirror that of the partial birth abortion debate, which went through Nebraska courts and was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court before Congress made it a federal law that was upheld in 2007. So The partial birth abortion ban is the ultimate example of a law that ends with and then you can kill the baby, because it just described different ways to kill innocent children, you know, besides the particular procedure described in the partial birth abortion manual as written by Warren Hearn, another late-term abortionist. But the fact that these laws create cases that that basically drag abortion out into the public for a debate, what that tells me is that one of the major concerns of abortion regulators, like people in the Catholic Archdiocese, people at Focus on the Family, people at National Right to Life, the people who want to regulate the killing of innocent people, they say that we are basically inviting legal cases that could end up putting us in a worse position than when we started. And they defend their regulations by saying, look, we're forcing legal cases that make abortion a headline issue, and that is good for our side because it increases the social tension over abortion. So, but well, you can't have it both ways. Do you think somehow that personhood is going to produce legal cases that are going to hurt us? Because I can assure you that personhood is making abortion a headline issue once again, especially in the boardrooms of organizations that are in favor of regulating the killing of unborn children, as well as in the boardrooms of Planned Parenthood and NARAL. Let's see. Opponents of this law that's drafted in Oklahoma, the Statistical Reporting of Abortions Law, opponents of that law say the law was drafted to make a woman's already difficult decision to have an abortion even more difficult. Well, I'm tired of trying to make abortion more difficult. I'm tired of trying to make the killing of innocent people more difficult. Let's make it unthinkable. How about that? Let's make it unthinkable by creating a law that teaches our young men and women that an unborn child is a person. Let's make it unthinkable. Now, delving deeper into the personhood file from the Associated Press in Maine, supporters of Maine's same-sex marriage law continued Friday to collect far more campaign contributions than their opponents in a referendum that's being watched nationally. Now, you may wonder, why is this in the personhood file? It's just an example of the fact that the left seems to be outraising the right when it comes to social movements. I'm not sure why that is. Anyway, I don't want to go. Do I want to go into more details on this? Let's see here. No on One, which is the queers, they say that in their campaign finance report that they've raised $4 million. That compares to $2.5 million raised by the normal people. Let's see. Despite the funding advantage, the queers are taking nothing for granted, said campaign manager Jesse Connolly. He said, "We know this is going to be a razor-thin election." Ooh. Now, conservatives, what do they say here? Too much information. I just don't care enough. I want to get back to personhood here. Personhood leaders were in Montana this week. Three major players. Now, listen to this. This is an article by Wendy Norris over at Reproductive Health Reality Check, also known as rhrealitycheck.com. These are some of the people freaking out and shaking in their boots the most about personhood. Listen to what she says. Three major players in the absolutist anti-choice movement. I love that term. Can I trademark that? The absolutist anti-choice movement. I'd like to be a founding member of the absolutist anti-choice party. Anyway, she says, these major players headed to Big Sky Country last week to push a second attempt at a state ballot measure to ban abortion without exception. She calls it the Egg as a Person campaign. Did you hear that? The Egg as a Person campaign. You know, so just like Southern politicians use demeaning terms to dehumanize black Americans back during the abolitionist movement, so the abortion industry uses dehumanizing terms for human beings in the womb. She calls this an Egg as Person campaign. She says the so-called personhood law is the latest gimmick by anti-abortion activists to overturn Roe versus Wade by focusing on zygotes' due process and equal protection rights under the 14th Amendment. So you hear that? She calls them zygotes. But one thing's for sure, Wendy Norris understands what we're doing, perhaps better than the leadership of the Catholic Church, perhaps seemingly better than the leadership at Focus on the Family. And seemingly, she understands it much better than the leadership at National Right to Life. We want to overturn Roe v. Wade by asserting the unborn child's equal protection rights under the 14th Amendment. Yes, ma'am, that's what we aim to do. And I'm glad that our enemies understand what we're doing, because our friends seem to be confused. Anyway, she says, she asserts that all these outside forces are coming in. Into Montana. She says, what the anti-choice groups may lack in serious constitutional law scholarship, they make up for with sophisticated charitable fundraising campaigns to fuel state initiatives and a nationwide barnstorming tour to build local support for what its own proponents admit is the last-ditch effort to outlaw abortion. Well, she is right. We are working on a very sophisticated charitable fundraising campaign. We are trying to raise as much money as possible. We're not doing as well as the queers out in, where was it, Florida? Where's that story? I lost that story. Anyway, I probably threw it away because it involved homosexuals, and I tend to throw those in the trash. Hold on. Yeah, it's the queers in Maine. I'm sorry. The queers in Maine have raised $4 million. Well, here in Colorado, we haven't quite raised $4 million yet, and I don't think Montana's quite up to $4 million yet. But Wendy, we are coming for you. We are. This is the last-ditch effort to outlaw abortion. The problem, Wendy, that you don't realize is that this last-ditch effort will continue throughout the rest of your entire life and mine until it happens. There is no other way to outlaw abortion. There is no other way to prevent the murder of these innocent children than to assert their personhood. All of the other methods have been tried. They didn't work, Wendy. So we're coming for your jugular, you whore. Take that. I'll throw that away. All right. And I mean whore in a philosophical sense, just to be clear. Let's see. Now, what happened in Mississippi? Now, Mississippi is working on a personhood initiative. Speaker of the House Billy McCoy became the latest political leader in Mississippi to add his support behind the personhood amendment, which would amend Mississippi's constitution to define the word person to include every human being from the moment of fertilization, cloning, or the functional equivalent thereof. He joins Lieutenant Governor Phil Bryant and Auditor Stacy Pickering as the most prominent politicians in the state who have signed the voter initiative. Several state legislators have also signed on. I'm a little disappointed that this newspaper from out there in Mississippi didn't name them, because one of the things I've been asking people, if they want to sign a petition, I say, do you want to go down in history? Yeah, take 10 seconds and let's change the world. Do you want to go down in history? Sign the personhood petition. Let's put it on the ballot. Let's vote for it in November. Let's go down in history together as part of perhaps the greatest social movement in the history of our nation. And that gets people's attention. Let's see. But now there are a number of people who apparently don't want to go down in history. I met a man named Jim Daly a couple weeks ago. Asked him to sign my petition. He's the president and CEO of Focus on the Family. I met him face-to-face, citizen-to-citizen, man-to-man. And I asked him to sign the personhood petition. He took it in his hands. He was about to sign it when his flunky, Joel, whoever Joel is like his flunky assistant. His flunky assistant said, no, Jim, we can't sign that until we talk to Tom Minnery. And Tom Minnery, I forget, he's somebody's flunky up there too. I'm not sure who he is, but apparently he's supposed to be somebody. Well, Jim Daly had the pen in his hand. He had the petition in his hand. And I said, Mr. Daly, do you believe an unborn child is a person? And he said, well, of course I do. And I said, well, I'm not asking you to sign it as a representative of Focus on the Family. I'm asking you to sign it as a free American. And Flunky Joel said, no, Jim, we can't sign that until we talk to Tom Minnery. And then they scuttled off, and Joel gave me his business card. I sent Joel an email, a long involved email, asking Focus on the Family to get out in front of this. This is a great social movement. I know they all believe that unborn babies are people. And I got a call back from someone named Carrie. I don't know if that's Joel's secretary or some other flunky secretary over there at Focus on the Family. But I had a nice long 10-minute conversation with her when she told me that she had a couple of concerns. And these are the same concerns that I've heard from National Right to Life, their legal flunky, Jim Bopp, over there, James Bopp, legal flunky for National Right to Life. The Archdiocese of the Catholic Church, both here and in Florida, the flunkies there. I've heard these same concerns, and they basically come down to this. Personhood is an all-or-nothing gambit that could further solidify Roe versus Wade. Could put us in a worse position than we are right now, to which I say, any woman, any man, can go forward with an abortion in any situation at any time during a pregnancy. How could we be set back any further? If really what it's all about is ending abortion or restricting abortion, which is what they say they want, they want to restrict it. Well, okay, you want to restrict it. Well, any woman can get an abortion anytime, anywhere, for any reason. How could we be set back further from that position? Okay, so that's how, and for all you legal flunkies out there, if you people at Focus on the Family or the Catholic Archdiocese or National Right to Life, if you're listening to the show, if you've decided to listen to reason and you have an argument against me, please bring it on. I'd be happy to have you on the show. I'd be happy to read your email. In fact, I'm going to send a link to this show to all of these flunkies. and to Jim Daly as well. Now, what's their other concern? Could further solidify Roe versus Wade. Give me a break on that. Are you people delusional? I mean, I know a vast majority of the entertainment industry and government are on a lot of prescription drugs, but is it true of our political and social leaders in the conservative movement as well? Are you people on drugs? Their other concern is that we could provoke a premature confrontation. A premature confrontation in the courts. And my answer to this, Mr. Daly and Joel and Kerry and Archbishop Chaput, who I met unintentionally at a Catholic church on Sunday, and I think I insulted him gravely because the Catholic, the priests were walking past me as I'm on the public sidewalk because they won't allow me onto their premises to gather signatures affirming the personhood of the unborn. As they're walking by me, I said, "Do any of you gentlemen want to sign the personhood petition? Do you want to go down in history as someone who stood up for personhood, or do you want to go down in history just like the political leaders in the border states during the abolition movement in 1845, 1850, where they were sitting around trying to figure out which way the wind blows on this issue? I said, which way do you want to go down in history?" At which point they slammed the door and apparently went on with their mass. But anyway, one of the Catholic leaders here in Colorado sent an email to one of the leaders at personhood saying that, you know, your people are really out of control. One of your people insulted the Archbishop this morning. And they said, okay, that's either Doug McBurney or Ken Scott. They knew it was one of us. And I know that if Ken had been there, he would have done it too. But anyway, they don't want to provoke a premature confrontation in the courts. And I would say to you, if you've got the best weapon and people are being murdered, why on earth would you delay a confrontation? It's the Weekly World View. I'm Doug McBurney. We are rounding third and heading for home in more ways than one. You know? In more ways than one. A last-ditch effort to end abortion. And that comes from the mouth of a pro-abort scumbag writing for RH Reality Check. Meanwhile, the leaders, the so-called leaders, Christian leaders and conservative leaders, just they don't know what to do. They're apoplectic. I cannot comprehend it in my small, uneducated mind. I just cannot comprehend it. Jim Daly and your flunky Joel, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves. You should be embarrassed that you've risen so high in political and social structure that you've lost track of your own conscience. But where there's life, there's hope. And in Christ, there's forgiveness and repentance. And Christ will always show us the truth. And I pray daily that if I'm wrong about this, if personhood is not the right strategy, Lord, please bring someone into my life who would enlighten me, because I don't want to be a fool. I don't want to make a mistake that would jeopardize lives. I want to do the right thing. And I know that when you pray to God for wisdom on what is the right thing to do, and if you really are sincere, that you will be enlightened either through his word or through another member of the body of Christ who will bring that knowledge into your mind. And I apologize if I've insulted these Christian leaders by calling them flunkies and whatever. I suppose that's a little bit out of line. But I get a little passionate about this whole thing. All right. Let's move on. Do I want to do the domestic tranquility file? I really don't like doing the domestic tranquility file on the heels of that file, but that's the way it came down, folks. What is the state of domestic tranquility in throughout America? Dateline. This is from the Associated Press out in Missouri. The body of a missing 9-year-old girl was found in a wooded area near Missouri's capital city on Friday, 2 days after she was last seen walking home from a neighbor's home. That's Missouri. Dateline Inglewood, California. Police say a 4-year-old girl walking down a street was wounded in the head by a stray bullet outside a preschool. Several men got into a confrontation with a driver last Thursday and shots were fired. The girl was walking with her mother when she was hit. She was last reported in stable condition. Now this brings to mind, and maybe this is because I never went to journalism school, but what they said here was she was wounded in the head by a stray bullet. And I was watching the local news the other night, and on one of the, 6 or 10 murders that were reported here in the Denver metro area last week, one of the reports on one of those murders said that the accused fired the shots that killed so-and-so. He's accused of firing the shots that killed whoever. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second now. He's accused of firing the shots that killed another person. Well, so where are the shots? And why aren't they on trial? Why aren't you reporting that these shots have been sequestered and are in jail if the shots killed someone? See, it's a little trick of the language that the liberals like to use so that no one is ever responsible for anything. He's not accused of firing the shots that killed so-and-so. He's accused of killing so-and-so. The shots were just a tool that he used. And the shots aren't going to go on trial, and the shots aren't going to be sentenced. Just like this little girl, she wasn't wounded by a bullet. You can't apprehend a bullet and take it to trial. She was wounded by a maniac. Someone who should be charged with attempted murder. And then executed, by the way. Anyway, that just bothers me. But maybe if there's someone out in the audience who went to journalism school and you can explain to me why this is happening or why this is, why they report this way, well, maybe I'll be enlightened. Like I say, I'm always willing to be enlightened, okay? Dateline Verschire, Vermont, from WPTZ out there. Nazei Hamarui, I can't even pronounce this guy's name. Nazei Hamarui faces a first-degree assault charge. Police say that Hamarui stabbed his 19-year-old son in the stomach with a corkscrew after an argument over a clogged toilet. Police allege that Hamarui was drinking. That's Vermont. Not a lot of domestic tranquility in that household. Let's see. From the Associated Press, Police are still searching for a Virginia Tech student who hasn't been seen since she was separated from her friends at a Metallica concert about 10 days ago. Morgan Dana Harrington, 20 years old, was last seen near the John Paul Jones Arena there in Charlottesville. Let's see, she was last seen wearing a black T-shirt with Pantera across the front in tan letters, a black miniskirt, black tights, and black knee-high boots. I think that's going attire for a young 20-year-old at a Metallica concert. And when I saw this story, the only thing I could think of was my daughter, my oldest daughter, who's only 8. And I want to put this on record that if Nicole ever comes to me wearing a black T-shirt with Pantera across the front, a black miniskirt, black tights, and black knee-high boots and says, "Dad, I'm going to the Metallica concert," I'm going to persuade her to stay home. Let me just put it that way. I'm going to persuade her to stay home. Anyway, it's a tragedy. They haven't found the girl yet either. Again, from the Associated Press, Florida, Summer Thompson was walking along the sidewalk in front of a vacant house at last report, she was walking home from her elementary school. Well, the child's body has been found now. She's a 7-year-old girl. Her body's been identified. Authorities say that she was murdered. But here's the good news. For all of you people who want to regulate immorality, there's good news in this story. Okay, 7-year-old Summer Thompson was brutally murdered walking home from elementary school. But the good news is authorities said they have ruled out all of the 161 registered sex offenders who lived within a 5-mile radius of this little girl's house. Did you catch that? 161 registered sex offenders lived within a 5-mile radius of this young girl's house. She's been brutally murdered. But at least we can take heart in that our efforts to regulate immorality, not unlike our efforts to regulate abortion and to regulate adultery, here we have the regulation of child rapists. We can take heart that at least the system is working. None of the 161 registered sex offenders who lived all around this girl have been clearly identified as the killer. Do you see the system working? Ladies and gentlemen, do you see how the system works? Yeah. Okay, Dateline Reno, Nevada, from the Associated Press. A 22-year-old Nevada man has been jailed on suspicion of murder after he allegedly fatally beat a woman. Ryan Bonnet is accused of killing 47-year-old Eileen Pruitt last Sunday night. Witnesses told deputies that Bonnet became upset because the woman refused to give him a cigarette. That's the end of the domestic tranquility file date. Let's see from the justice file from the Associated Press. A 4th Ohio inmate has gotten a temporary stay of execution as state officials and defense lawyers continue to examine the state's lethal injection method. Yeah, you remember, they couldn't execute this guy. No one had the common sense to just grab a chair and beat him to death there in the death chamber. And now Ohio can't figure out how to execute convicted murderers. They've now stayed the execution of 4 murderers since they couldn't find a vein on this this murderer. You all remember the story. I'm not going to go any further than that. Dateline Camden, New Jersey. Howard Barton Unruh, who killed 13 people as he walked the streets of Camden back in 1949, has died at the age of 88 of an extended illness at a psychiatric hospital. The leading cause of death for murderers in America is indeed old age. All right. What do I want to end with here? I don't know which one of these stories... Well, let's try to do both. Dateline Johannesburg, South Africa, from Reuters. South African traditional leaders plan to perform ritual animal slaughters to bless stadiums for the 2010 World Cup tournament ahead of the start of the event next June. Zolani Mkiva, chairman of the Royal Trust, who's responsible for coordinating the cultural activities, said, "We must have a cultural ceremony of some sort. We are going to slaughter a cow. We sacrifice cows for this great achievement, and we call on our ancestors to bless, to grace, to ensure that all goes well. It's all about calling for the divinity to prevail for a fantastic atmosphere. We believe that from the start we've got to do things in accordance with our own traditions in South Africa." Doesn't South Africa lead the world in the kidnapping and assault of children as well? I hope they'll set aside some of their traditions over there. All right, from Politico. I'm not going to have time to do this, am I? From Politico, comedian David Cross made a shocking confession. He said that seated yards away from President Barack Obama at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he did something truly shocking. He said he was seated near former Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, former Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia at the correspondence dinner. He said, "I'm there, and the president's right there, and I'm surrounded by Secret Service, and I snorted some coke 40 feet away from the President of the United States." That's comedian David Cross. Well, David, everyone there we know was on drugs, although mostly prescription. But that doesn't qualify as shocking. It's just another milestone marker on America's long descent into hell. And I've run out of music, but I'll go ahead and end the broadcast. I want to thank KGOV, KGOV.com. One of the first, maybe the first, as far as I know, internet radio broadcasts. Denver Bible Church, where just coming off a powerhouse sermon this morning. For those of you who don't attend Denver Bible Church, you should subscribe to the sermons from Pastor Bob Enyart. Today, he related four or five news stories from right out of the headlines to the Christian life, to the character of God, to the truth of the Scripture. I mean, it was energizing. It was a powerhouse sermon. If you don't get them, you should. You can get those at kgov.com. Personhood USA and all the great work they're doing. Colorado Right to Life and Personhood Colorado for all the work you do. Trying to drag our Christian and our cultural leaders to the right, to do right. Everyone at American Right to Life, who is the fountainhead and the conscience of the personhood movement, in my humble opinion. The folks at Theology Online, who encourage debate on issues theological, cultural, social, moral, everything else. And of course, as always, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen, here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.